I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Seen lots of weapons have been flown into Israel from the US, from Germany, from Australia, from the UK, many of whom likely being used in war crimes against Gaza now. So there are serious questions to be asked about international complicity in Israel's war against Gaza.
As the World Health Organization warns, Gaza's largest hospital is turning into a cemetery. We'll look at how the United States and other nations are helping to arm Israel and its assault on Gaza. We'll speak to Anthony Lowenstein, author of The Palestine Laboratory, How Israel Exports the Technology of Occupation Around the World. We'll also speak to the London-based Palestinian journalist Ahmed Al-Naouk, co-founder of We Are Not Numbers. An Israeli airstrike killed over 20 members of his family, including his father. We'll also talk to the prize-winning journalist Jasmine Hughes, who was forced to resign from the New York Times Magazine after signing an open letter criticizing Israel. We'll also speak to the writer Jamie Lauren Kalis, who's leaving the New York Times as well.
When the war broke out, a letter began to circulate amongst journalists asking people to sign on, asking for fair coverage of the war in Gaza from mainstream media publications. For me as a journalist, it was a no-brainer to sign. The only reason to be a journalist is to be in the business of talking about the truth. So shortly after I signed the letter, I realized there was going to be potentially some type of retaliatory action on the behalf of the Times. And I thought, well, if I can't speak the truth in the job of a journalist, then why be a journalist at all?
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees says its operations will grind to a halt if no fuel is allowed into the Gaza Strip by Wednesday. The warning from UNRWA came on a 38th consecutive day of relentless Israeli attacks on the besieged Palestinian territory, with dozens killed and wounded in the latest Israeli strikes on the southern city of Khan Yunis. This despite Israel's order to Gazans to evacuate to what Israeli leaders have called a safe zone in the south. The United Nations says more than 200,000 northern Gaza residents have fled their homes over the past 10 days. This is Abu Shadi Al-Hayak, an 80-year-old forced to march south on foot.
We have no food or water, and we are displaced from our home. Our building was destroyed with our belongings inside. I'm fleeing with no clothes. We are all without clothes and don't know what to do. What can we do?
President Joe Biden called Monday on Israel to scale back its attacks on civilian targets, saying its military should take what he called less intrusive action at Gaza's main medical center, the Al-Shifa Hospital. Biden added, quote, "The hospital must be protected." His remarks came after Doctors Without Borders reported Israeli troops fired on medical teams and an ambulance attempting to retrieve injured people from Al-Shifa's gates. At least one Israeli sniper fired into the hospital, hitting patients. Others reported they'd been struck by gunfire from low-flying Israeli drones. Israel claims Hamas has a command center below the hospital, but the claim has been denied by hospital officials. Human Rights Watch has called for Israel's attacks on Gaza's hospitals to be investigated as war crimes. In February, Biden signed an executive order barring the U.S. from supplying weapons to countries that would likely use them to target civilians. But just last week, the Biden administration approved a $320 million deal to supply Israel with precision-guided bombs. And Biden's asking Congress for a further $14 billion on top of the $3.8 billion in annual U.S. military aid to Israel. The armed wing of Hamas said Monday it's prepared to release up to 70 women and children held hostage in the Gaza Strip in exchange for a five-day ceasefire. In an audio recording, a Hamas spokesperson accused Israel of stalling on implementing the deal. On Monday, family members confirmed the killing of 74-year-old Canadian-Israeli peace activist Vivian Silver in Hamas's attack on Kibbutz Be'eri near Gaza. She had been missing since October 7th. Her family had believed she might have been taken hostage. Silver co-founded the Arab-Jewish Center for Equality, Empowerment, and Cooperation and was a member of Women Wage Peace. In 2017, she joined a march of Israeli and Palestinian women to the shores of the Jordan River to call for an end to Israel's occupation.
We must reach a political agreement. We must change the paradigm that we have been taught for 7 decades now, where we've been told that only war will bring peace. We don't believe that anymore. It's been proven that it's not true.
Israeli military strikes on southern Lebanon killed 2 people near Israel's border Monday. Separately, an Israeli electric power company employee died from wounds sustained from a Hezbollah missile attack on northern Israel Sunday that injured at least 13 other civilians. Also Monday, several journalists came under artillery fire from Israel as they reported from the Lebanese border village of Yarun. The attack wounded an Al Jazeera cameraman and damaged equipment. A Lebanese television crew was broadcasting live during the attack.
انتقل بالصوره طبعا هنا نصبح قبالة.
The Committee to Protect Journalists reports 42 media workers have been killed in Israel, Lebanon, and the occupied Palestinian territory since October 7th. Most of them were killed by Israeli strikes. The Center for Constitutional Rights has filed a lawsuit against President Biden, accusing him of failing to follow his obligations under international and U.S. law to prevent the genocide in Gaza. The complaint was brought on behalf of Palestinians, including residents of Gaza, who are asking a federal court to block Biden, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin from providing further military funding, arms, and diplomatic support to Israel. Catherine Gallagher, a senior attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights and one of the lawyers who brought the case, said in a statement, quote, "The United States has a clear and binding obligation to prevent, not further, genocide. So far, they failed in both their legal moral duty and considerable power to end this horror. They must do so," she said. In Washington, D.C., dozens of rabbis were joined by spiritual leaders and hundreds of others for a morning prayer and reading of the Torah in front of the U.S. Capitol Monday, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. After the special Shacharit service, rabbis and supporters marched to congressional offices where they met with elected officials. This is Congressmember Cori Bush.
We are rabbis. We are pastors. We are congress members. We are surviving family members. We are human beings, and we are bound by our faith to demand a ceasefire now, to demand an end to the violence now, to demand that love and peace and justice and humanity reigns and is at the center of all of our work now, not tomorrow, not next week, not in a month, not in a year, now. Ceasefire now. Ceasefire now. Ceasefire now.
Mexico's first openly non-binary magistrate and respected LGBTQ plus rights advocate, Jesus Ociel Baena, has been found dead in their home in the state of Aguascalientes. Officials said Monday there's an investigation underway into Baena's cause of death. LGBTQ and human rights activists are demanding Mexican authorities investigate this as a possible hate crime, as Baena had received repeated death threats. Thousands of people joined a march and vigil in Mexico City last night demanding justice for Baena.
What happens to one of us happens to others. We don't want anyone else to live through that again, and not one more person to lose their life to hate crimes.
The U.S. Supreme Court said Monday it's adopted a new code of conduct following a series of high-profile corruption scandals. In April, ProPublica reported Justice Clarence Thomas failed to disclose lavish gifts and payments from billionaire and conservative activist Harlan Crow. More reporting revealed Justice Neil Gorsuch sold property he co-owned to the head of a major law firm that has since had many cases before the Supreme Court. And the wife of Chief Justice John Roberts was paid over $10 million in commissions as a job recruiter, placing lawyers at elite law firms. The Supreme Court's updated 14-page code of conduct contains no enforcement mechanism. The anti-corruption group Revolving Door Project blasted it as a, quote, unenforceable public relations document that serves absolutely no purpose other than to permit the media to revert to pretending that our unaccountable and unethical Supreme Court retains legitimacy, unquote. A former attorney for Donald Trump has revealed an aide to the ex-president said in December 2020 that Trump did not plan to leave the White House under any circumstances. On Monday, The Washington Post published video of four defendants who've accepted plea deals in the Georgia election interference case answering prosecutors' questions as part of cooperation agreements that brought them reduced sentences. This is former Trump attorney Jenna Ellis recounting a conversation with former White House advisor Dan Scavino.
He said to me in a kind of excited tone, well, we don't care and we're not going to leave. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, the boss, meaning President Trump, and everyone understood the boss. That's what we all called him. He said the boss is not going to leave under any circumstances. We are just going to stay in power.
Despite his legal woes, President Trump remains the front runner for the Republican Party's 2024 presidential nomination. On Sunday, he stoked fresh outrage with these remarks at a Veterans Day rally of his supporters in New Hampshire.
We pledge to you that we will root out the communists, Marxists, fascists, and the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country.
On Monday, the White House condemned Trump's remarks, comparing them to the language of Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini. In Atlanta, Georgia, police attacked peaceful protesters with tear gas, pepper balls and flashbang grenades Monday as hundreds rallied against the construction of a massive $90 million police training complex known as Cop City. Over 400 protesters marched toward the sacred Uilani Forest, the proposed site for Cop City, where activists spoke to the crowd, including the parents of environmental defender Manuel Esteban Terán, known as Tortuguita, who was fatally shot by Georgia state troopers in January. And the Argentinian-Mexican philosopher and theologian Enrique Dussel has passed away at the age of 88. His work in decolonizing philosophy and formulating a Latin American liberation theology has grown increasingly influential in recent years. He challenged Eurocentrism's influence, writing, quote, modernity elaborated a myth of its own goodness, rationalized its violence as civilizing, and finally declared itself innocent of the assassination of the other. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The United Nations says more than 200,000 Palestinians living in the northern Gaza Strip have fled their homes over the past 10 days after being forcibly displaced by Israel's massive bombardment. Since October 7th, more than 1.5 million Palestinians have been displaced. That's more than three quarters of Gaza's population. Many fear they'll never be allowed to return home. Over 1,500 displaced Palestinians remain at Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza, which has run out of fuel and has stopped functioning as a hospital. The World Health Organization has warned Al-Shifa has become, quote, nearly a cemetery, as dead bodies pile up outside the hospital. Heavy fighting has been reported just outside the hospital doors. Israel claims Hamas has a command center below the hospital, but the claim has been denied by hospital officials. Many Palestinians in Gaza are comparing the recent events to the 1948 Nakba, Arabic for catastrophe, when 700,000 Palestinians were pushed out of their homes and turned into refugees during the creation of the State of Israel. This is 80-year-old Abla Awad. She grew up in a refugee camp in Gaza, had been forced from her home as a five-year-old in 1948. Now she's become a refugee again.
We came here. We fled from Jabalia camp and came here to escape the bombings. And now we're here. Ants are everywhere. Flies are everywhere. There's no food. It's been a while since I had any bread. I'm hungry and want to eat. They're kneading the dough now. It's the same thing happening again. We were displaced from our home cities and we ended up in Gaza. We used to live in Berej refugee camp, and now it's a second Nakba. What did we do to them? Every few years they bring a new Nakba onto us. I was 5 years old, and I remember being displaced. Our families carried us along with their bags, and they took us to Gaza. I swear it's the same as what's happening today, just like they displaced us the first time. They are doing so another time. The two situations are alike. I have never seen a war like this. People are being displaced.
The words of Abla Awad, an 80-year-old Palestinian woman in Gaza. We go now to London, where we're joined by Ahmed Al-Nauk. He is a Palestinian journalist from Gaza who lives now in London, co-founder of We Are Not Numbers. At least 20 members of his family have been killed in Gaza since October 7th, including his father and several siblings. His recent piece for The Nation is headlined, "Palestinians Just Want to Be Treated Like Human Beings." Welcome to Democracy Now! We are so sorry for your loss, Ahmed. If you can talk about what happened to your family.
Thank you very much, first, for having me. What happened to my family is what happened to another 1,000 Palestinian family. In fact, 1,200 other Palestinian families. And it's what has been going on for the past 75 years. My family were sleeping in their home. There was my father, my three sisters, two brothers, my cousin, and 14 nieces and nephews. They were sleeping in my home on the 22nd of October when Israel bombed my home and killed all of my family members, except for two, actually, except for three. One of them was a kid whose name is Malak, 10 years old. She was severely burnt, and then she spent a few days at the hospital, and then she succumbed to her wound. The rest is my nephew, 3 years old, and my sister-in-law, she survived. But 21 family members were killed. And this is what's happening in Gaza. This is what has been going on for the past 75 years. And only since the 7th of October, more than 1,200 other families suffered the same loss I have suffered right now.
And Ahmed, you left Gaza in 2019. Have you been able to return since? And when was the last time you saw any of your family members?
Well, unfortunately, I left Gaza in 2019, but I haven't been able to meet any of my family members ever since. And I was, for the past 4 years, I have been trying my best to meet with my father, to see my father. He was an old man. He was 75 years old, but he looked older than he is. He was very sick. And for the past 4 years, I have been dying every day 100 times because I miss my father and I couldn't meet with him because of the borders and the blockade. Unfortunately, I haven't seen him ever since I left Gaza, and I never met with any of my siblings who I lost ever since I left Gaza.
Your reaction to the enormous protests around the world, there was a huge one in London this Saturday. What do you hope might come from these mobilizations?
Well, actually, London has been protesting for the past 4 weeks. Every Saturday, London protests, not only London, but also in Edinburgh and in capitals all over the world. People are protesting in thousands and in hundreds of thousands. The Saturday that we have seen on the protests that we have seen on Saturday in London, people estimate the number between 800,000 to a million people. It's one of the biggest protests in the history of Britain after the protest in the war in Iraq in 2000. 2003. And these hundreds of thousands of people who protested, every one of them called for one single thing, a ceasefire and ceasefire now. It gives me a heartwarming feeling that Palestine, that my family, that the children in Gaza are not forgotten, that people follow the news, that people care about the Palestinians in Gaza, and people, and most importantly, that people in the West no longer buy the mainstream media narrative that seeks to dehumanize and demonize the Palestinian people and to provide a cover for Israelis to commit massacres against the Palestinian people. So it gave me a heartwarming feeling that we are not forgotten, and people care about us, and people will keep protesting against the Israeli occupation. People will keep protesting against this aggression, this onslaught in the Palestinians in Gaza, until there is a ceasefire. And I think these protests are doing a great job. We have seen that the governments, many of the politicians, have changed their tone when it comes to Gaza. We have seen the comments from President Macron, which is very good, and I think it's a step in the right direction. I think this country is a democracy, and I think people, when they protest, I think eventually their government will have to listen to them and pressure Israel to stop its onslaught on Gaza.
Can you talk about the politics of what's happening in London now? I mean, this massive protest, one of the largest Britain has seen in London this weekend, and then the ousting of the Foreign Secretary Braverman, saying that pro-Palestinian marches are hate marches. So she was thrown out. And David Cameron, the former prime minister, was made the foreign secretary. And then the discussion of Tony Blair being brought back as well. Your response, Ahmed?
Well, I think the message that the protesters in London and all over the UK gave to the government is that we do not accept to be slammed. We do not accept to be called hate marches. We do not accept the false allegation that people who protest for Palestine are anti-Semitic. And unfortunately, we have seen some comments from politicians, from the former Home Secretary, describing these marches as hate marches. Unfortunately, we, the Palestinians and pro-Palestinians and people from all over the UK, now we are talking about the majority of the people who live in the UK are now pro-Palestine, are pro-ceasefire. You could rarely find someone who wants Israel to continue their massacres against the Palestinian people. Unfortunately, the government is not living up to its responsibility as a democracy. They're not living up to the demands and aspiration of the British people. And I think the British people were very generous, very kind. They were very pro-justice, and they came from all across the UK. On Saturday, the people came from all across the UK. They traveled for hours in order to participate in this protest. And their message was that they do not accept these allegations. They do not accept that this protest is a hate march. They come Jewish, Muslims, Christians, atheists, people of LGBTQ, people from all colors, from all faiths, came to the UK, came to London on Saturday, and they protested, calling for a ceasefire. This is actually a love march, and people who came here, they came out of love, out of humanity, and they came here to say that enough is enough. And these people do not accept that their Home Secretary says that they are hate marches. And I believe that the power of people is very, very, people are very powerful, and their calls are very powerful. And I think eventually the government will have to listen to them. I think this is a step in the right direction from the British government to ousting this Suella. And I really hope that the next Home Secretary, I really have hope that they will do a better job than the previous one.
We were just showing video of this massive march, and among the signs, there was a large group of Jews who were marching, saying Jews against apartheid, the Jewish star with not in our name. But I wanted to come to the United States and get your response, Ahmed, to what's happening here. President Biden speaking Monday, saying Al-Shifa Hospital must be protected.
You know, I have not been reluctant in expressing my concerns what's going on. And it's my hope and expectation that there will be less intrusive action relative to the hospital. We're in contact And we're with the Israelis. Also, there is an effort to take this pause to deal with the release of prisoners. And that's being negotiated as well with the Qataris that are engaged. And so I remain somewhat hopeful. But the hospital must be protected.
The hospital must be protected, President Biden said. Your response, and also previously, to the large Jewish population who is speaking out against what Israel's doing in Gaza and separating their condemnation of anti-Semitism from condemnation of the Israeli state.
The Jewish people in this country and in America actually has been playing a pivotal role in the in this struggle against the occupation and this struggle against the apartheid and occupation of Palestine. We in London, we have, for example, in this protest, more than 1,000 people, Jewish people, came in the protest in the Jewish bloc, and they protested, and their calls were the same calls as everyone in the protest is calling for. The Jewish people are part of the struggle in the of the Palestinian liberation movement, and they have been doing a great job. And actually, I believe that one of the most vocal voices for Palestine are of Jewish voices. We have seen many organizations in the U.S. and in the U.K. with Jewish people, Jewish Voice for Peace, and Amud, and many other organizations here and there who are fighting day and night for the liberation of the Palestinian people, who are fighting against the occupation peacefully and justly. They're not anti-Semitic. They can't be anti-Semitic while they are Jews. But unfortunately, the smear campaigns that the Israeli lobby is doing here is fierce, and they do not distinguish between the Jewish people or the Christians or the Muslims. As long as we are pro-Palestine, as long as we are against occupation, then we are anti-Semitic. That's really absurd. But I am very, very, very proud, and all of us are very, very, very proud of the Jewish community. Of the Jewish community in the U.S. and in the U.K., who challenge the stereotypes, who challenge the Western media, and who challenge the disinformation and misinformation about what's going on in Palestine and Israel, and they came out and said in one word that they are a pro justice, pro peace, and they are with a ceasefire now. As for Biden, he said that Ashifa Hospital should be protected. I really want to believe him, but I don't think that he's genuine in his calls, because he is supporting Israel. He has been aiding Israel with the money, with diplomacy, with weaponry. He has doubled the money that he gives to Israel to bomb us. For example, my family was bombed by an F-16, an American-made airplane. So Biden provides Israel with whatever it needs, with the weapon, with the cover, with whatever it needs. And then they say that Ashifa Hospital should be protected. Unfortunately, Ashifa Hospital is not protected. Now, most of the refugees who came to go to the Ashifa Hospital, they already left. We have seen videos of piles of bodies at Ashifa Hospital, and eyewitnesses say that the stray dogs go and eat from the bodies of the Palestinian people because they cannot go and bury these bodies of the dead people in the Gaza Strip. Unfortunately, I think this comments from Biden should be... I will only believe these comments if he does something, if he does an action. But right now, I do not trust his words. I do not trust his calls. And I believe he is complicit in the war crimes that Israel is committing against the Palestinian people, including the targeting of the hospitals, Ashifa Hospital and other hospitals. They have been targeted, these hospitals, because Israel had the cover and the atmosphere from the U.S. government, from the U.S. military, from the U.S. media, mainstream media, to do what they are doing right now.
Yeah, Ahmed, I wanted to ask you, you were mentioning Ashifa Hospital in the United States being complicit. The terrible, absolutely terrible images we've seen in the past 2 days of the premature infants cut off from their incubators and just all together in a big group surrounded by aluminum foil to protect them. I can't understand why, even in the United States still, even in the West, there are still people who don't recognize the enormous war crimes that are being committed here. Your sense of what it will take to stop this, to allow at least a ceasefire, in Gaza right now?
Well, I don't know what it takes to force a ceasefire. After everything that we have seen, after the targeting of civilians, the targeting of hospitals, targeting of schools, targeting of refugees as they are going south, more than 15,000 people now already killed, including the 2,000 or 3,000 people under the rubble. Entire areas have been wiped out. Neighborhoods have been destroyed, and people are starving. People are literally starving in Gaza. They don't have food. They don't have water. They don't have medical supplies. They don't have electricity. They don't have internet connection. All of this, a genocide, is taking place in Gaza, and we're still seeing some politicians and some governments who refuse to push Israel for a ceasefire.